wins them all at Augusta.
After two historic years, it was wonderful to have all our patrons back. It was great to hear all the roars out there today.
Oh, he went low as well.
Oh, is that any good? What a three for Scheffler.
Not a shot I expected to see go in, but, you know, it definitely changed, you know, I wouldn't say it changed the complexion of the day, but it definitely got things rolling for me.
Birdie for Scheffler, and he's up four with four to play.
I tried not to look up. I tried to keep my head down and just keep doing what I was doing because I didn't want to break my concentration.
Right in the heart. Scotty Scheffler gets it to 12 under par. May just have one arm in the green jacket with three to play.
I've dreamed of having a chance to play in this golf tournament. I teared up the first time I got my invitation in the mail. You know, I love this place.
It's time to embrace the champion.
I can't believe that I can come back for a lifetime and get to enjoy this golf course.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith from ESPN. I'm so grateful to be back with you once again for the fifth consecutive year to walk alongside all of you on the week-long journey towards a new chapter in Masters lore. This is the greatest week of the year, my friends. For me, walking on the grounds here at Augusta National is a reset, a rebirth, a reimagination of what's possible. The azaleas burst with color, and the pines sway in the late afternoon breeze. It is stunningly beautiful. More beautiful than you imagine it could possibly be. There are precious few places where tradition is tangible. At Augusta, you feel it everywhere, all the time. And I don't know why. I'm still searching for the why. But there's also precious few places that made me feel so alive. We'll spend the week detailing the 87th Masters Tournament through a lens only the majesty of the Masters can focus. It is a singular event and is viewed through an unparalleled scope of undistracted presence. We'll get perspective from star players throughout the week regarding their preparation, expectation, energy, and hope. You'll hear from Augusta National Chairman Fred Ridley about all things Masters, including the new length and layout of the iconic 13th, and we'll interview celebrity patrons throughout the week as well. As we do each year here on Four Please Now Driving, we spend the first few minutes of a new dawn by reliving the emotion of basking in the sun. Scottie Scheffler achieved the Masters Championship dream in 2022 at just 25 years old. He finished the tournament at 10 under par, three shots clear of runner-up Rory McIlroy. I recently spent time with Scottie to chat about life cloaked in green. Scottie, first, I asked you last year on Sunday evening how your dreams of Masters glory as a little boy compared to this reality that now you'd won the tournament and you had a green jacket that you could wear on your back. At that time, of course, you were still processing. Well, now, brother, you've had a year. So as you look back on this accomplishment and what it means in your career and within your life, how does it kind of intersect with those dreams you had as a little boy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, so we were on property this week, went back, played the course for 2 days and got to wear my jacket to dinner. And I think that all kind of helped make it seem more real. I think it's still kind of hard to process what's going on because I always dreamed of playing on the PGA Tour and I dreamed of being able to win these tournaments, but I never really expected to kind of be in this position. I was always just trying to get a little bit better at a time. And I never really overthought things. I never expected to be on the PGA Tour. I was always just hopeful. And so, I mean, all this other stuff, winning the Players, winning the Masters and all this stuff is great, but I'm just trying to stay in my own little bubble and continue to just get a little bit better and continue to just work hard.
Have you watched the final round back from last April? And if so, what were your emotions watching it back?
I did. I haven't watched it. We watched it pretty soon after the tournament, so I don't remember a lot of what went on the broadcast, but it is funny kind of watching and you can listen to the announcers and it's funny watching, knowing what's going to happen and knowing that it turns out good for me. it was just kind of one of those interesting things. It was so fun to watch and it was very special for Meredith and I to be able to see just kind of how everything unfolded and get to relive it again, kind of knowing how you felt over each shot and knowing what it felt like walking up 18 green and then having the celebration there with all my family. And it's just, it was so fun to be able to kind of relive the memories of that week.
Yeah, that's okay if you know the ending of that movie, right?
Yeah.
You can watch how that one unfolds knowing how it ends. But you noted the walk up 18, put me there. What was that emotion? What was that moment?
I think there's just a good amount of relief. I was definitely very tired at the end of that day. I think major championship golf, especially the Masters, takes it out of you emotionally. And so as we're walking up there, there's just the satisfaction of being able to accomplish that feat. And then there's really just a lot of just kind of gratefulness from Teddy and me, just being thankful for that position and being able to accomplish that, that goal of ours and just to enjoy it. I mean, how many times are you gonna be able to walk up 18 fairway with a significant lead and know that you have the tournament in hand, and then just getting to look around, enjoy how beautiful Augusta National is, and just getting to see my family, getting to hug Meredith. And I think that's probably the most fun part about winning is the celebration on 18 green, just getting to hug everybody. And that initial kind of joy is one of the best parts about winning.
What comes with the Masters champion title that you can't predict until you hold it?
Probably two things. I guess just there's two different ways to look at it. You have my on golf course stuff. You have the golf course life, and we have life here at home. Meredith and I kind of laugh because we talk about living sort of a double life. Like we have when we go out and travel and play golf tournaments, and then when we come home. And when we're out traveling, playing golf tournaments, things are a bit different now because, like you said, I am a Masters champion and people know who I am now. When we step out to a golf course and a golf tournament, you know, there's some people there that are there to see me and they want to watch and interact and have fun. And as a player, that's a joy for me to kind of be in that environment, be in the arena with people watching and getting to showcase my skills and stuff like that. And just going out there and competing, that's really, really fun for me. And now it's the fun has almost been amplified because there's more kind of surrounding it. And it's a lot more fun playing in front of thousands of people than it is just my family. Getting to play in front of fans is such a joy. And that part of it has all been a bit different. And it's hard to predict what it's really like before you get started. And then you go out there and experience it kind of week in, week out. And it's just, I mean, it's a joy. And I'm very grateful for it. And then you have our at-home life and things are basically the exact same as they were before that. I remember after Sunday last year, we got home Sunday night really late. We woke up in the morning and it was like, well, what do you want to do? So we did our usual deal. I went to the coffee shop, got some coffee, went to our breakfast spot, got some breakfast. And it was kind of eye-opening how many people were coming up and talking to us, saying congratulations. Everybody, I think, was so surprised to see us back out kind of in public so soon because, I mean, so many people watched the Masters and they saw us on their TV on Sunday. And then all of a sudden we're in the coffee shop with them on Monday. And Meredith and I were a little bit taken back by all that was going on. And we kind of came home and we're walking home. We're sitting there talking to each other, like, is it going to be like this every day now? What's going on? You know, is this how life is going to be now? We're going to have to, all the thoughts start flowing into your head, you know? And then we did the exact same thing Tuesday morning. And it was like, nobody even knew we were there. And things are just back to normal.
That's funny. Couple more and I'll let you run, brother. I know how busy you are. How have you grown as a player and as a person in this past year?
I think as a player, I've grown probably more comfortable, I guess, in the spotlight. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I've grown more comfortable kind of in those situations. I'm just more used to having people around. When I first started out on tour, there was obviously nobody out there watching me. So I got spoiled being able to just go out there and practice all day, every day, and not having to do anything else. I didn't have to do press conferences. There was nothing else I needed to do or was responsible for other than going out there and working on my game. And now on the other side of this, there's usually people around, there's media around, there's all this other stuff, which are great problems to have. It's fun for me to be able to do as a player, but it just takes more time and energy throughout the day. And so as a player, I've really learned to be much more efficient in the way I go about things at golf tournaments, whether it be my practice or media or whatever it is, just being extremely efficient so that I'm still ready to go and energized on Sunday when all the cameras are out there and hopefully I'm competing for a title.
What's the best experience you've had in the green jacket
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think I'm probably going to go with a recency bias here. Getting to go back on property and have dinner and wear my jacket to dinner was really special. I hadn't been back on property since I won the Masters, and getting to go back there and relive it with my dad and Randy, and just getting to go play the golf course and getting to wear my jacket to dinner there was a very, very special memory.
Tiger Woods told me once a couple years ago that even he, when he stands on the first tee on Thursday, has some nerves. And that's Tiger Woods, man. He's done it a few times. What's the best advice you would offer someone about playing in the Masters?
For me, when it comes to playing in intense situations, it's all about preparation. And so if I was to give myself advice going back into my first Masters and walking to the first tee, I would just tell myself that I'm prepared for this and I've practiced and done everything I've could to go out there and play well. I did all the work. I've been working towards something like this my entire life, and I've practiced hard. I've worked hard in the gym. I've worked on my mental game. I've done everything I could to go out there and play a good round of golf. And so now it's time to just go out there and let it go and have fun and just kind of enjoy that moment, enjoy playing in the Masters, and just be grateful for the opportunity that we have to be out there playing golf.
What should fans expect from the new layout on 13?
More long irons into the green. You're probably going to see more guys laying up because the tee shot is significantly harder now. When you're hitting 3-wood off that tee, you can really – because you put more spin on a 3-wood, and it's easier for you to hit kind of a big slinging hook with your 3-wood and kind of get it around the corner just because the spin on the ball keeps it in the air. If you had a big hook with your driver with the launch conditions and the ball spinning less, it usually just nosedives. And so you can't hit really a big slinging hook around that corner. Or if you can, it's a much harder shot than it is with the 3-wood. And so you're going to see guys being further back off that tee, further into that side slope and hitting longer clubs in that green. And since it's such a harder shot now going into the green, you're probably going to see more guys laying up.
All right, last thing here. You're a Texas boy, so I'm going to presume that means you're serving Q or brisket tacos or something like that to these guys in the champions dinner. What's it look like?
So dinner this year, it's basically just a compilation of all kind of my favorite stuff. We got good steak. We got some cheeseburger sliders. I think we got like some bang bang shrimp, and then all family style sides like mac and cheese. I think Brussels sprouts. There's a few other things on there, but it's basically just a bunch of my favorites, and then chocolate chip cookies and ice cream for dessert.
I mean, that's as American as it gets right there, son. That's a good work out of you. Look, I really appreciate you, man. Congratulations again on all your success. Can't wait to see you make an attempt to defend your championship there at Augusta National Golf Club. And again, congratulations on your continued phenomenal success. I appreciate your spirit very much.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate having me on.
Cheeseburger sliders, firecracker shrimp, Texas ribeye, blackened redfish, skillet ice cream cookies. Scheffler knows how to throw a party. One of the great traditions here on Four Please Now Driving is time spent with legends. And that includes our annual Masters preview with the voice of the Masters, CBS lead announcer Jim Nance. It is now time to welcome someone that I admire tremendously and have for the vast majority of my life, certainly my whole career. And I know so many of you listening to the Masters podcast, this gentleman has been the soundtrack of your Masters experience for more than 30 years. The great Jim Nance from CBS Sports. I think this is the fifth time we've had the opportunity to preview the tournament together, and I look forward to it so much every year. So first of all, I want to just discuss this with you. And I know you're just now, as we begin the week here at Augusta, kind of getting into the mode coming off the NCAA tournament where you're shifting gears to what is, I think, your favorite week of the year. But one thing that I admire so much about this tournament and about those that run it and host it at Augusta National is they've been able to remain so current and in so many ways revolutionary while also being able to harness and demand all of the tradition. How have you seen the tournament evolve in terms of there's so many ways now for us to consume it, and we can watch any hole we want at any time. So how have you seen them stay so current while also maintaining that tradition?
How do I articulate it any better than what you just said, Marty? That was so great. Your observation is spot on. First off, I want to say this. This is our fifth year, so that is now a tradition. I can't even wait another 10 seconds to say this makes this a tradition unlike any other.
When my man.
Right? There you go.
A podcast unlike any other, right?
I love it. A podcast unlike any other. Marty, that's you, babe. You know, it's – how do I express it? Because I totally agree with everything you just said. It's a fine line to balance all of that, to be innovative, to be cutting edge, to be breaking new grounds, to explore new territories with whatever it might be, technology being a very big part of it. And at the same time, holding true to some of the traditions that are the bedrock of this very event and club. It's really well done. It's a lot of big thinking. It's a lot of visionaries. It's a testament to people that want to try to do things better the next time. Just when you think you have it perfect the way it is, but how can we get better? How can we be current? How can we take it to the next level? So there's been a lot of that. It's obvious. Because I come back now this week for the 38th year, and there's still a part of it that feels like 1986 for me. But if I was to go back and watch myself and look at the week of what 86 was like, it would be different, and particularly on the broadcasting side of it. The shows would be, well, they would look prehistoric now in some capacities. You know, it wouldn't be the HDTV. It wouldn't be the graphics, the animations, all the many things that really were brought to golf through this very event were introduced here at Augusta. Take, for example, this sounds a little far-fetched now, but it's totally true. We didn't have in America, HDTV, what is that? What is high-definition television? We didn't have it in any capacity the first time I ever laid eyes on it. There was a year or two where they were testing it, and they had these monitors that were set up inside the clubhouse. And I go into the clubhouse to meet some of my Augusta friends, and they would explain to me what we're looking at. This is the future you're looking at on this wall. Look, look at the elevation at 18. Look at this camera. Look how you can see the slope on the greens that are flattened out by today's television standards. And I thought, wow, that's probably not in my lifetime. That's probably 50 years down the road. Well, guess what? It was introduced at Augusta. And it actually, for a couple of years there, was introduced, and a lot of people didn't have the ability to receive it that way. Their televisions at home weren't set up to receive an HD feed. Those things you take for granted. But I've watched them be conceptualized, introduced, and applied at Augusta, like many other things. So here we are. You know, what's the next great frontier that is going to be brought to life at Augusta?
I say all the time that high definition was invented for the Masters and the Rose Bowl. There is obviously nothing as emotional or sensory or insightful from a sensory perspective like actually walking the grounds at Augusta National. It's overload because the beauty is just overwhelming. But you watch it on television, it's also, there's nothing that looks like the Masters on TV. Nothing.
You can't compare it to anything. Let's be honest. It was an absolute perfect fit. I appreciate your homage to the Rose Bowl. When you talk about 200 acres of property here and the visual poetry that Augusta delivers, it's the all-time perfect fit. Is high definition television in the Masters tournament. So you're getting me all excited. I'm getting a few tingles here, starting to think about the show here in a few days. So thank you, Marty.
When you get to Wednesday here, I know that you've told me in the past that you go to Amen Corner and you have a bit of a moment of solitude and fellowship. What is the exact emotion that you feel when you get there?
It's gratitude. It's always centered around gratefulness. That's what steers me, is just
gratefulness for what?
Just the opportunity to be here, to have had the experiences that I've had, the people that have been at the center of my life, and people that I've loved and been loved by. You know, it's there's a lot of people that are on the journey with me, and I've loved being able to, as many times as I can, I've loved being able to tell them how important they've been to me. So that's the prevailing feeling. I it steers me though in most everything that I do, is to never take on a sense of entitlement or lacking in appreciation. It's just not my nature. So when somebody says hello to me, I want to say hello back. Somebody wants to stop and ask you to take a picture, I'm going to take that picture, or whatever it might be. I'm grateful that people think enough to want to stop and have a conversation or shake your hand or get your autograph, whatever it might be. But it's bigger than just that. It's the gratefulness that you could take a childhood dream, which I had, and I wanted to be a broadcaster. And I wanted to specifically be a broadcaster for CBS, because when I was a young boy, the Masters hooked me on it, on the idea that one day that's what I would like to do for a living. I'd like to be one of those voices. And I'll do anything in my power to try to work my career and put in all the reps, different things that I have to do along the way, that one day may possibly lead to CBS knowing that I'm out here and saying, hey, let's check out that kid. Maybe we can bring him in for an audition. So I was always mentally there, thinking that one day that's where I want to be. And now you actually live it out this year, 38 times over. I wanted to be at CBS, not because of the college basketball tournament, which was an amazing part of my life, because CBS didn't have college basketball when I was 11. The tournament wasn't on CBS then. They did have the NFL, and I was truly in love with the way that was presented too. So I thought, wow, the way they tell the story, the way they frame the NFL, the way they look at it, but most of all, it was the CBS presentation of golf and the way they told stories, not just stories from the commentators, the way CBS presented the tournament, told the story visually. That was for me. That was the goal. And that's a big reason why I take that walk out to Amen Corner on Wednesday afternoon. I walk across the Hogan Bridge, and I may look like I'm examining the turf quality of the 12th green, but I don't want anybody to wonder what's he doing out there, but I'm actually walking around and internalizing a lot of thoughts and complete prayerful introspection about what I'm doing, how fortunate I am to be here, what has happened in the past year since I was last on the grounds at Augusta. Take inventory of the goodness that been in my life and the people who have always looked after me. And I feel it. I feel a very powerful sense there of connecting, you know, all the different threads in my life, from my parents to my sister to my children and, you know, to my friends and mentors. I feel it all. It's like it's like a worship service for me in a way. I'll just put it that way.
Well, it's certainly a spiritual experience, regardless of whatever your higher power may be when you get there. It truly is. To walk those grounds and walk through the pines and feel the ghosts. It's just a wonderful emotion for anybody who has the blessing of getting to do it. And you've done it for all these years and at such an unbelievably high level, emotional level. I mean, your words are embedded in our minds in a way that no one else ever has. And your perspective on the tournament is very keen. I don't know if you recall that you in fact picked Scottie Scheffler to win the Masters on this platform 1 year ago, and you were proven right. He had a tremendous performance. So how do you describe the golf that man has played in the last year?
There's something about it to me that with Scottie that starts again internally. I don't know him as well as I know some of the other established stars of the game because he's just so young. I'm getting to know him, and I admire him so much for the person that he is and how grounded he is. But just again, as a broadcaster who is paid to observe people, places, and things, and tell people what you sense or see, my observation about Scottie is there is a centeredness in him. There's a composure. There is a quiet internal confidence. There's nothing boastful about him that he can completely live in his own bubble, sphere, universe. He can come into Augusta like a year ago, having won three times recently. And some might think, well, that hot streak has to end. You can't keep winning like this. And he can ignore the noise and go out and win again. And, you know, we saw at the Players' Championship a few weeks ago. And, you know, we've seen what Scottie's been doing this year, particularly in recent form. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him come back and win it again. But I guess what I'm saying is I think he's almost bulletproof when it comes to, like, losing his own center and his confidence in himself. It's not played out in public. You just kind of can trust that Scottie Scheffler, if physically his game is there, the internal confidence and all of that that you need to have to be a great player, that's always going to be there. So if his game is on, you can check the other box. I think he's mentally as strong as anybody I've seen come around in a long, long time, which is going to lead to a lot of wins. And you know, his star power is just getting started. He's a rocket ship. He could be winning this thing and other majors for years to come. He's got it all. The mental fortitude, it's impressive. And I've seen them all. And I've seen what Tiger can do and how I think it starts inside of his head. And then you got the physical part that Scottie or Tiger or Jack that they've had. So good for him. He'll be a force. Could be a force again this week. I remember making that prediction. You know, predicting golf tournaments is not an easy thing to do. Even Tiger in his heyday, you couldn't say, well, I'll pick Tiger this week. You don't win 100% of the time. Now, we know he had a stretch at one point where he won 7 out of 11, including all four legs spanning across 2000 until the Masters in 01 gave him all four majors at one time. But picking a champion of a golf tournament is a hard thing to do. Now, the last one I remember picking accurately before Scottie was Sergio in 2017. And that was a little out of, out of left field for some people. And I was at a speaking engagement on Wednesday evening, and I was asked who I liked, and then just dumb luck. But I said on that occasion, and I'm reminded of it by a lot of people that were there that night, I said, I'm vacillating between Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose. They went to the playoff, and I knew I'd already won the exacta. I had it covered on both sides. No, I'm joking. I don't bet on any of this stuff. But I had the top two horses in the race, and they went to a playoff. And somebody said, "Well, why did you like Sergio?" And I like Sergio because, again, I got at least as an observer, I like the fact that he had recently been married. And I just thought he was in a happier, more joyful universe, his universe, than I'd ever seen it before. And I thought that would free him. I thought that would give him some sort of internal confidence to go and showcase his talent. That's why it's leading me at this point to making a prediction for this year.
All right, I'm all in. What you got?
It's going to be the year that I predict Rory's going to win it.
Okay. All right. Okay. You guys heard it here first from the great Jim Nance. It is time for Rory to finally close the book.
Well,
and win the Masters.
I do think it would be, he is the right man for the occasion. It's his time. And in that, I mean this, he has stood up and been a spokesman for the sport and strongly stood up for his side of the story and this disruptive time universally with the game. It's for many people to have been asked about it so many times over and over again. It would be a burden. But what happened in all of this is he actually rose with it. I mean, there's a lot of that who wants to take on all of that? Who wants to have to be constantly asked about players that defected or relationships you used to have with certain players and standing up? Listen, he stands up for what he believes in. I admire that greatly. But just to constantly like live in that world of, what would you call it? Intense scrutiny and high stakes drama playing out between the highest exposed players in the game. And Rory's been such a voice of reason through all of this. And while he has been, his game has been at an extremely high level. Short of it is, Marty, I think in a way, I think that has prepared him to be able to mentally go through all the constant reminders that we have that this is the missing leg of the career Grand Slam. This by comparison to what he's done in the wars between the PGA Tour and LIV, this is easier for him to handle. But it wasn't always that way. I think since he was looking to close out the career Grand Slam, this storyline going into the Augusta was just so big that it I don't know. I've never asked him this question, but it'd be overwhelming to a lot of us mere mortals to have so many people heaping on your shoulders these expectations about, is this the year? Is this the time? Are you going to win it? This is the one you're missing. What would it mean to you to complete the career Grand Slam? This last year has taken that line of questioning and made it look much easier to handle than what he's had to handle as far as being a spokesman for what he believes in with the PGA Tour. I think it's been an exercise in preparing him to be able to come in here and take it all on, all the scrutiny, all the questions, all the expectations about Rory being one on that very sacred list to have won the career Grand Slam. So I think all roads might be leading to this being Rory's crowning achievement.
I don't know, Jim, but I think if that were to happen, if Rory were to close that book on the career Grand Slam and win the Masters and don the green jacket, as we've all waited for so long. I mean, he was anointed a long time ago. It would be as popular a victory as we've seen in a lot. Now, obviously, Tiger in 2019 might be one of the most popular ever for sure. But Rory's would be a very popular victory, right? Because of him standing up for the tour the way he has, his own convictions the way he has. Do you believe that? Do you agree?
100%. 100%. The great majority of the golfing public is ready to lift him on their shoulders and carry him off the 18th green. Like from the movie, The Greatest Game Ever Played, that scene where Francis Wee Met is riding off the green and being carried off the country club as people are going wild. That's not going to happen. I'm speaking figuratively. But I do believe that it would be just enormously popular and loved by the great majority of the golf universe and beyond. It would transcend it. He's a super smart guy. I mean, listen to his thoughtful answers on everything. And he gets asked a lot to be an expert on everything about things that involve not only his career, but PGA Tour, and it goes all over the map. He can handle it. I mean, he handles it so skillfully. I'm impressed by Rory on many levels. He's a great person. Obviously, he's one of the iconic figures in the game. He is. Whether he gets this or not, it doesn't change. There's a lot of great players in the history of the game that missed a major. I just happen to think he's destined to be one of those that got all four. And I happen to think this feels like, to me, from a mental perspective, the perfect time for him to go in there and claim it. Golf is very fortunate to have Rory McIlroy standing up for the sport on whatever the issue might be.
I've said for some time now, and prior to the LIV scenario, I got laughed at, quite frankly, by some folks, that I felt like he's the voice of the PGA Tour because he has been so willing for many years. It's been accentuated and highlighted now because it's such a controversial topic all the time. But you're right. He is just takes so much time, and he's also so respectful to the people that are asking the questions, which, you know, those of us like you and me in the business always appreciate people that consider what's asked and offer to their best ability and honest perspective. I won't keep you any longer. I do have one more thing that I'd love to get your thoughts on, because you know all the people there. What do you expect the energy will be like at the Champions Dinner? It'll be the first time some of those guys, Dustin Johnson, Sergio, guys that have gone to live, will kind of be in the same room as Tiger and the folks that are on the PGA Tour who are former champions.
There's been a lot of talk about it. I think it's been discussed in the media so much that I think there's not going to be a whole lot to report after it's done. Listen, at the court, they're golfers. And wherever they're playing, at the core, they've spent their lives playing a game that is built on one principle, integrity. So these guys, whoever they might be and whichever side they reside on, they're going to walk into that room and they'll be cordial. I just can't imagine there's going to be a story that comes out of it. It'll be a dinner, and some people might choose not to be over the top generous with time for someone else, but they'll find their seats and they'll sit and they'll find something to talk about. There'll be the toast from Scotty. The champion always delivers the toast, brief usually. And they'll turn to some of the, living legends that are there and ask them to regale us with a few of the old stories. Jackie Burke's going to be there this year, by the way. He hasn't been back in a few years. Mr. Burke turned 100 at the end of January. He's the first Masters champion to ever reach 100 years old. So Mr. Burke will be there. I'm sure there'll be people deferring to Crenshaw to tell a few Byron Nelson stories. And, you know, Jack will be there, and of course, Gary. And I think the room really ends up turning out to be, if there's one conversation, I think it ends up becoming a conversation that's historical based, the old time storytelling of what it was like back in their day. And wherever, again, golf takes you these days to compete, everybody's going to be interested in knowing the old time stories about Jimmy DeMeritt, which Mr. Burke was a business partner with and opened the Champions Golf Club down in Houston, their shrine to the game. Incredible place there. Or Ben Hogan, or, you know, Arnold Palmer. His presence is still very much kept alive at Augusta, and I'm sure there'll be some Arnie story that will be told that night. In the end, I'm seeing a lot of discussion about what will that dinner be like. I don't think it's going to be anything out of the ordinary. I think people will choose who they want to spend a little extra time during the pre-dinner sit-down part of it. And then I expect a civilized, convivial gathering of the players fortunate enough to have won the green jacket and who are alive to talk about it. So good for them. I expect it to be a non-story.
I do too. I think all of them are so keenly aware of the blessing of being in that room and what is expected of you when that title precedes you, when you are Masters champion, such and such, you are representing so much more than self. And so I agree with you. You're right. They may not be like, "Hey man, sit right here beside me," but there will certainly be the mutual respect that comes with them achieving the ultimate peak in the sport, at the ultimate platform in the sport. So I'm so grateful for you. I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you, Marty. I admire you so much. And we got to do this next year and make it six straight years. Embolden our tradition unlike any other, our pod unlike any other, and talk about how I accurately predicted back-to-back years the Masters champion. And one last thing about that dinner. I'm a big dinner guy. I'm not a big, like, going out at night guy and hanging out in bars. I've got work on the road, and I enjoy a great dinner and good conversation. If I was ever fortunate enough to attend any dinner in my life, which obviously I'm never going to qualify for this, I would think, getting back to what the players must feel, that would be the coolest dinner. That would be the coolest dinner invitation, I think, on the planet. There's nothing that can compare. You can talk about a state dinner. You can talk about anything you want. That would be number one, the greatest dinner to be on the guest list for. That means you've won the Masters or you're the chairman of the club. That would be, wow. That
so
would
two be- points. Two points quickly. Number one, Trevor Immelman posted on social media his dinner invitation. And I responded to his post and said, it must be like Christmas every single time that shows up in your mailbox. And he said, it's so overwhelming because every time's like the first time. And I just can't imagine. I agree with you. I can't fathom what it would be like to just be in there with open ears and a closed mouth and listen to those stories that you just discussed. What if it was your dinner to host?
Oh, boy.
What would you serve?
Oh man, you can't make those snap decisions like that.
I know. It's a very difficult one.
I'm going to tell you one thing, man. I'm going to have stone crabs.
Okay.
That's for sure. I'll probably have them as an appetizer, though. I'll get Joe's to ship up stone crabs, not the colossals, not the mediums, the large with the mustard sauce. And as Venturi taught me, put a little Worcestershire sauce in the mustard. And it makes it enhanced even a little bit better. So I'd start there. I'd have some sort of healthy salad. And the entree, I need time to think that one through. And I've got a lot of – I'm a foodie. And I know what wine I'd be serving, by the way, but we'll save that for another time.
Oh, I was going to – you know me and follow-ups. I'm the king of the follow-up here. I'll just let you tell me that one in private, I guess. But
yeah, if that were my calling, it would be a very special dinner. I'll put it that way.
Well, I'm so grateful for your time. There's nobody in the world who's busier, and you're always so gracious to share your perspective and amazing, amazing insight and spirit. And I appreciate you, man. Have a great day. Enjoy this week. I know how much it means to you, and it means so much to us to hear how much it means to you every single week when you're headlining the Masters coverage for CBS.
Two things that get me fired up for the Masters. It's hearing the promos during the NCAA tournament with the Augusta Melody and doing this pod with you.
A podcast unlike any other. I consider that to be quite a compliment coming from the man who coined the iconic Masters mantra. I always appreciate Jim's time. Time is so precious. And he doesn't have much to spare. But when the subject is the Masters, he always makes time. Tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, a new Masters chapter is written with the introduction of the Road to the Masters Invitational. In a collaboration between EA Sports and Augusta National Golf Club, 8 celebrity players from the worlds of pop culture, sport, entertainment, gaming, and social media will trade their clubs for controllers and square off in a one-of-a-kind, never-before-done gaming exhibition in the Augusta National Press Building before a live studio audience. The Road to the Masters Invitational
will be hosted by NBC's Rich Lerner, CBS reporter Amanda Renner, ESPN's Michael the Caddy Collins, and yours truly. The event will be streamed live on Masters.com, Masters social media channels, EA Social, Twitch, YouTube, and ESPN Plus. A truncated version will air on ESPN2 Wednesday evening following the par 3 contest. The participants in the Road to the Masters Invitational are truly a who's who. Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen, golf presenter and commentator Iona Stephen, Grammy-nominated country music icon Eric Church, golf content creator Roger Steele, Garrett Hilbert from Dude Perfect, PGA Tour star Tony Finau, LPGA star and major champion Lexi Thompson, and internet gaming personality Tim the Tatman, who boasts more than 21 million followers across social media platforms. I cannot begin to describe how much it means to me to spend this week with you each year in fellowship at the Church of Golf, with a pimento cheese sandwich in one hand, a crow's nest cold one in the other, and a heart full of gratitude just to be here. Thank you so much for sharing your precious time with us. We'll be here every night of the tournament to bring you updates, insight, and storytelling from the greatest event in sport. This is Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith. Have a wonderful Masters week, everyone.